in that world, it's like, it's really not about like performing for yourself. It's about providing a service. So we view it that way. We're getting paid well to provide a service. Sure. We want to make the client happy. So we try to have a pretty big repertoire to be able to accommodate that.
This episode is brought to you by DistroKid. DistroKid is a distribution service that can get your music into all the DSPs like Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram. Over a million artists have used DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I've used DistroKid to get my music out, distribute some of my songs. As you know, as I look into all of these distribution services, I test them out. And DistroKid is great. They offer a ton of features, annual fee, unlimited uploads, and you keep 100% of your royalties. Check out DistroKid.com. What's going on? Welcome to The New Music Business. I'm your host, Ari Herstand, author of How to Make It in the New Music Business, the book, third edition, coming very, very soon, January 23. It's looking like, so look out for that. Today, my guest is Carrie Rayburn. He is the band leader and trumpet player, frontman of Good Company. Now, Good Company, they make a high six figures every year. That's in a non-COVID year. Playing private events, special events, and the Performing Arts Center market. If you're curious about how to break into the Performing Arts Center market, this is the episode for you. But also private events, weddings, all of that kind of stuff. We touch on that at the end because that's where they specialize. But the Performing Arts Center market is something that I've always found intriguing, never really knew much about, but always knew, kind of similar to colleges, that they pay a lot of money for artists that don't really necessarily have much of a fan base. And we get into all of that and how that works and how you can break in if you're interested. And just, you're going to walk away from this episode an expert on the Performing Arts Center, also known as PAC, market, also private events, all that kind of stuff. And as you hear, we reference the course. Carrie references the course a few times. That's the Ari's Take Academy course. I enlisted Carrie after having a bunch of conversations with him and being so intrigued and just astounded by his wealth of knowledge in this area and this market. I enlisted him to teach the Ari's Take Academy course on special events. So if you want to learn more about this, and he talks about it more at the end too, you can go to ariestakeacademy.com and check out the special events course. It is application only because it is, we want to make sure that the right artists are coming into that. It's a very small community. We have agency showcases and all of that. So if you think you're right after listening to this episode, you're like, you know what, this is probably the market for me. You can check out the course, special events for Ari's Take Academy. But for right now, please subscribe to the show, follow the show, like it. However you're listening to it right now, just pause it real quick, hit that follow button, hit that subscribe button. And if you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, we'd love if you could leave a 5-star review. Those really, really help. I love reading the reviews, hearing what you have to say. If you're listening on YouTube, hit me a comment. I try to get back to all the comments there. Love to hear what you think. Give it a thumbs up. Subscribe to the channel. And head over to ariestake.com. Get on that email list. That's where we send out the most up-to-date information. You can find all of us that make the show happen at Ari's Take on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. You can find me, Ari Herstand, on Instagram and Twitter. All right, let's kick into the show. Carrie Rayburn, welcome to the show.
Sorry, thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I'm excited to dig in with you today because you exist in this really unique part of the music industry that rarely gets discussed. Honestly, before I kind of met you, I had only heard about it peripherally because a friend of mine worked. He was like booking music at a performing arts center once, and he told me about the crazy numbers that were being thrown around in terms of like performance fees and stuff like that. And I didn't even know this thing existed. I mean, I've, of course, you know, seen performing arts centers, and I've attended shows there, mostly like touring Broadway stuff or big like orchestral stuff. But when we met, you know, and your electro swing band, Good Company, you found this really incredible niche in this kind of private event, corporate world, wedding world, but also most interesting to me is the Performing Arts Center market. And can you just, I guess, break down, let's start here. Let's start with what are performing arts centers, and what is this whole market that you have excelled in the past however many years?
Yeah, while now. The last couple of years don't count.
Right.
Well, the band's been around for 10 years or so. And I'd say we've been doing the Performing Arts Center market for like, I don't know, 8 or so.
Okay.
The Performing Arts Center market is the venues are basically, most cities and towns might have a theater that we would call a performing arts center. So like a suburb of Seattle is Kirkland. There's the Kirkland Performing Arts Center. Mm. And they put on shows. They bring artists in to present shows to their community. Other areas might have, they might use a local church and put on shows, and they might do like a series of concerts or events. So performing arts centers can really vary in size. They can be like really, really large venues like... Mm. I don't know. Paramount in Seattle is a really large venue. It's also considered a performing arts center. They bring in like Broadway shows and things like that.
And what are we talking in terms of like capacity of that theater, of that room?
That place, that's one of the biggest ones in Seattle. So it's like, several thousand.
Yeah.
And then you might also have like a place that's like out in Wyoming that might be, just a really small. Or they might host it at like the local high school's auditorium, and it might be just a couple hundred people in size.
And is it kind of like the community? Is it funded by the community, or talk to me about like who owns performing arts centers, these theaters, or are they connected? Is there a central organization in the country somewhere that owns all of them, or does the community? Or tell me how that structure works out.
Yeah, it's kind of varied. So there's no like central organization that owns. They're all independent entities. But some of them might be concert series that are put on by like a city or by a community group. A lot of them are nonprofits. Like a lot of theaters will be nonprofits. The Paramount, for example, is actually a for-profit, I believe.
Okay.
So it really, really runs the gamut. But a lot of the more rural areas will be like nonprofit theaters or nonprofit community groups that put on events. Mm-hmm. And then you have your kind of more traditional, like a theater that's trying to produce a profit. But they also get all their funding from ticket sales, but also from sponsors. And kind of like a normal like festival or a normal venue that you might think about, where they have different like places where they get their revenue from.
Okay, and ticket sales, sponsors, but also what I find really interesting, subscribers too, right?
Mm-hmm.
How does that work?
The subscription model really is a big deal in this world because most performing arts centers produce an entire season. And so they might have like a whole set of different shows that you could buy a subscription to. So maybe it's like the entire season, or maybe if they're presenting like a whole bunch of shows, it might be like a music series or a dance series, or they'll build different subscription series that people can subscribe to. And what that does for the Performing Arts Center is it provides them a lot of their like recurring sales. Mm-hmm. They have like an audience that will get subscriptions on a yearly basis. So it provides them kind of like a guaranteed income and allows them to be a little bit more adventurous with what they book, because they might have something. For instance, I heard a presenter talking about how he will book these Broadway shows, these touring Broadway shows, and he knows they'll sell out. And so that gives him the ability to book something else that might be less well known, or might be like a little bit more of a financial risk because it's an act that he thinks is interesting, or he thinks that might be, something that he just wants to, they want to present to their community.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the kinds of acts that performing arts centers, also known as PACs, book. So touring Broadway we've established, but most of the audience listening right now are touring musicians. So would just break down the kinds of acts that PACs book.
Sure. So performing arts centers, a lot of the work that goes through, a lot of the acts that do well are things that people can relate to in some way. So a lot of tribute acts do really well, but also anyone that someone's heard of in some way, that has any sort of buzz going on or is related to something they already know. So a lot of acts that actually do really well are acts that have some unique twist on something. So for instance, my band does electro swing, which is electronica meets swing music. But I've seen other bands that do like metal mariachi, which is Metalachi, I think is the name. I can't remember the name. But anyways, they like kill it. The you might have seen on like on YouTube, there's like a Piper band that does like rock music, and like a Scottish bagpipe band, but also groups that do original music and are just like really intriguing, or just have a great put on a great show. Also artists that do, you know, singer-songwriters that really connect to their audience well. But basically, acts that can be easily marketed are the ones that do the best. So, for instance, Celtic bands and Celtic dancers, those always do really well because that's something that's really easy to market for the performing arts centers to be like, listen, we've got this Celtic band coming in. Here's some videos. People go, oh, I know what that is. And you know, pretty much right away, they might think, oh, I either like that or I don't. And pretty much everybody likes Celtic music to some degree. So that's an easier sell. So the artists that they want to bring in.
Is that true?
Well, let's just say a lot of people do.
Okay. So that makes sense. I mean, it's kind of, it's less about selling the name of the artist necessarily and more about selling the event to their subscribers. Because I guess unlike a traditional music venue where the venue is selling tickets to a different show every night and 99% of the people that are showing up to the club know that band or there to see that band, this is more community focused. They're programming events for the community. And so whether it's like the Celtic Rockers or Celtic Mayhem or the Celtic Superstars or a night out with Celtic Rayburns or whatever, it's like, you know, it's all the same essentially in the sense that they can market that, like you said, and kind of sell that to the audience. So people are going to take chances because they know that the programming, they basically stand by their local performing arts center's programming. And you're saying, I don't know, is there like a breakdown of like how many like subscriber numbers versus cold ticket sale numbers, or just like is it majority subscribers, is it majority ticket sales per show? Or
I think it's different per community, but what I hear often is like maybe 40 or 50 or 60% in that range might be subscribers, and then the rest are individual sales. But it really does depend on the community. There's some communities where the majority of theirs are subscription sales, and some where it's we just performed for one recently where they didn't have any subscriber base, which was really unusual. But one thing that's really cool about that, though, is like you were talking about their programming, which is how it used to be for clubs, right? And other venues, too, where people would go to the club because they knew they would be able to see something great. It allows them to have a program that varies. So maybe you have the Celtic band. They're not going to have five Celtic bands in their program. They're going to have maybe one Celtic band. And then the next act might be a singer-songwriter that does original music, or it might be a dance troupe that's presenting, or they need to have like a varied program. They want to have a varied program so they stay interesting.
I'm browsing my, I was like, I grew up in Madison, Wisconsin, and I'm looking at it's the Overture Center for the Arts. Actually, I'm going to do this. I've started doing this a little bit. If you're watching this right now, you can see, I'm going to share my screen quick here. But I'm like on their programming page and everything kind of just saying, it's like, okay, so we see the Pretty Woman, the musical, but we also see, An Evening with George Winston. Okay. So he's more well known, but then here's the Prince tribute act here. An Evening with Fran Lebowitz. Okay. A little bit more famous, Aaliyah. We have the Hip Hop Nutcracker. Interesting. So now we're getting into kind of Christmas programming. We have the Straight No Chaser group. They've been around for a while. We have Wynton Marsalis. Okay. Another name, but it's so varied. We have another musical, Hadestown. Go ahead.
I'm going to kind of guess from this, rather a larger theater.
Yeah.
There's the Red Hot Chili Peppers that I was talking about actually. And a lot of
people. Oh my gosh. I didn't even catch that. I'm like, oh, wow, they have the Red Hot Chili Peppers coming? It's like, no, the Red Hot Chili Pipers. Oh, yeah. Okay, there they go. They do have a big theater. Actually, they have multiple venues. So, like, this one, for instance, the Red Hot Chili Pipers, bagpipes and with attitude. This is their description. Bagpipes with attitude, drums with a Scottish accent, a blazing rock band and show so hot it carries its own health warning. It's bagpipes. It's rock. It's Bangkok. AC/DC meets the poet Robert Burns, where rock anthems sit comfortably alongside the great tunes from the glens and the mountains of Scotland. The Red Hot Chili Pipers, not the Peppers, a nine-piece ensemble. This is a great bio here. I mean, man, it's like it really, really sells it. And this photo is incredible of them, too. That makes a lot of sense. But then we're looking at right next door is Black Violin, which... do you know these guys? I've never heard of this.
They're super successful. They've been kind of blowing up the last couple of years.
Cool.
In the performing arts market. But one thing I was saying is like this is a bigger theater. It's got a lot of different variety, but a lot of bigger artists and a lot of people that get started in the performing arts center market. When you're not very as well known, you might be performing at kind of smaller theaters, or like you mentioned, that particular performing arts center had different stages. So you might be on a smaller stage, and then as you get known through conferences and through word of mouth, because the presenters all talk to each other, you might for our experience and the experience for the people we've worked with, they've moved on up to do bigger and bigger shows.
You mentioned two buzzwords that, which bring me to my next topics. Presenters. What are presenters?
Mm-hmm. Presenters are anyone that's presenting an act. So they're the people. That's how we describe the performing arts centers. We call them presenters. So they're the people that are bringing in an act to present to their community.
Are they like talent buyers, promoters? I guess in the club market, we call them promoters. Is that interchangeable? Is that kind of like they're the promoters for the performing arts centers?
Yeah, they're you can think of them as bookers as for the performing
talent
arts
buyers.
Centers.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Bookers, talent buyers. Okay. So in the performing arts center, they call them presenters. Got it. Now, what are the ranges in terms of what are these people? What do you get paid to play at a performing arts center? I don't know how many of these acts necessarily have massive followings, but they have really great marketing materials and a really great bio that sells it. It's like, okay, I've never heard of the Red Hot Chili Pipers before, but like I'm reading that bio, I was like, oh, this sounds like a fun night out, and no wonder they're charging 66 tickets for it. It seems like that could be something, that a lot of the community would just take a chance on because it's presented by a reputable organization in town, which is their performing arts center that they know and respect and love. And it's kind of an act that seems fun. So what do the bands make? What does Good Company make? What do other bands make that don't like have, massive fan bases or Spotify numbers or whatever, but are, doing this market?
Yeah, so it's a really good point you bring up that our band, Good Company, is not very well known. I would say that probably nobody watching this, unless we got some of my family watching it, probably knows who Good Company is. Uh-huh. And if we went out to, Ohio to do a show, we would be drawing 10, 15, 20 people to a show.
In a club, yeah.
And we would be getting paid negative money.
Right.
But that doesn't matter when you're at a performing arts center and the rates they're used to paying for entertainment. The rates vary pretty wildly depending on the venue and where you're coming from and what your act is. But the minimum I'd say that I've ever played for from this market was for a festival that was local, and that was like $1,000. And the most that we get paid is like around the $10,000 mark for a show, and usually a little bit more if we're doing like outreach or there's some other things, and that's not counting the travel and the lodging and merch sales. That's just a base flat fee.
$10,000, and how many people are in your band?
We have six.
Six people. So let's say, what's the average amount, would you say, or the typical amount you're making for performing arts centers?
I'd say it's, I'm like a workaholic. I try to have as much work as possible. I would say the average is around maybe 5,000.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, that's incredible for a band without a fan base or much of a fan base, you know, like in the Spotify numbers are, you know, negligible, YouTube numbers. And it's like in this era where everyone is obsessed with the numbers, like Good Company wouldn't be able to get $5,000 from a club in the States to headline show anywhere. But you're commanding $5,000 performance fees regularly in this market, which is really incredible. And it's like something that, you know, is, and the thing is it flips the value proposition on its head, because in the club market, the whole thing is we're going to pay you based on how many drinkers you can bring to a club, because that's all we care about as a venue. All we care about as a venue is what's our bar sales going to be? That's their business model. Mm-hmm. But the business model for performing arts centers is not about selling alcohol. It's about providing entertainment and programming for the community. Mm-hmm. And because of that, they're hiring entertainers and paying people to entertain. They're paying people for their work, novel concept. And it's something where, because you guys put on a great entertaining show and you've proven yourself now time and time again in the market, and you're known now in the market, that's why you're able to command such fees when your numbers necessarily, like in this other realm, in the mainstream music industry, what we, you know, are so obsessed with and we talk about all the time, you would never see. And so there's this like really interesting niche market that you've found your place in. Is that somewhat accurate? Is that kind
of? Yeah, absolutely. I felt like for a long time I was kind of in these two different worlds, because I was trying to do the same thing that I think most artists do, which is try to play club shows and try to do bookings. And it was kind of a crazy thing where we would, I'd book a show at the Performing Arts Center that would pay, you know, thousands of dollars. And then we'd play the next day at a city, you know, a couple hours away and get the door, which would be, you know,
$12.
Yeah. A couple drink tickets.
And their expenses. It's like, oh, you actually, oh, wait, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel that it's like, you know, I have a lot of experience in the college market. I've played over 100 shows in the college market, and it's similar. Like when I was I don't do colleges anymore, but when I was doing the college market at my peak, I mean, I was playing towns where I had zero fans. But I would get $2,000-$3,000 as a singer-songwriter showing up at the top end, sometimes as low as, you know, $850 or $50. Like you said, similar, it would cover all my expenses. Mm-hmm. Like they would fly me out, they'd put me up in a hotel, they'd feed me and all that stuff. Because similarly, colleges hire artists to come perform and basically entertain their students. They need to provide programming for their students. It's not about your fan base necessarily. It's just like, we want to provide programming. And I feel like there's some parallels here, but the difference is just like, in colleges, the acts that do well in the college market are the ones that appeal to college age kids. Mm-hmm. So we hear this all the time in the college circuit. You age out. If you're over then like 35 or even like kind of 30, like you don't, it's not really something that you're not probably going to have as much success, I should say, in the college market than if you're 25. When I was crushing it, I was doing it when I was 25, and I was booking so many gigs and everything, because it's like they could relate to you. It's like, oh, you're kind of like us. You're just a couple years older than us, and that makes sense. But what I found in the performing arts center market, most of the acts are actually far older. I mean, you know, it's like I was just looking at some of the lineups of some of these other PACs, and it's like, oh yeah, it looks like most people are honestly in their 40s, to be honest. Do you find that?
Yeah, there's a lot of older folks. I think a lot of people, a lot of the acts, well, like, I come from Seattle, and Seattle's not super well known. Seattle's super well known for its music, but it's not super well known for its like professional people that have their shit together in the music world. And like, similar to the college booking world, like, you, part of what you're getting paid well to for is to have your shit together and be able to do a show and be you know, responsible, show up on time, and it's different than performing at a bar. But in the performing arts world, there's not a lot of young people that have it figured out at that time. I will say that when there are young acts that showcase, they usually get, and they have their act together, and it's a good production. People are really excited about it. Presenters do respond to that well, and they're always, the presenters are always trying to reach out to different audiences.
Okay.
So they, generally speaking, subscribers tend to be a little bit older, but they're always trying to reach out to young audiences for their ticket sales and to convert them into new subscribers.
Gotcha. Yeah, and that makes sense. I mean, these $65 tickets that I'm seeing listed for a lot of these events, you're not targeting college age kids for that. Like, no 20 somethings necessarily are going to go, are typically showing up to these shows unless they're going with their parents. And it's like, yeah, I think that's a big, big difference there, is that, like, yes, the subscribers and the people buying the tickets are definitely older, probably 50s, 60s, 70s, you know, in the age bracket. So you mentioned this a few times, and I want to touch on this. You mentioned conferences, you know, the presenters, seeing them at conferences and all of that stuff. Can you explain, I guess, where, what are conferences and how that has anything to do with performing arts centers?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was really lucky because I found out about this world and about conferences and all this craziness from performing in a different band. I used to perform in this trad jazz band called Miss Rose and Her Rhythm Percolators.
You were playing trumpet?
I was playing cornet, actually.
Cornet. Oh, for the people who are not familiar with the multiple iterations of what that looks like a trumpet could be, a cornet is just a smaller trumpet.
This is actually a cornet right here.
Nice. Yeah. All right, cool. All right.
Nice. So we went and performed at a conference, Arts Northwest, which is a booking conference, which booking conferences are where presenters come together to see different acts and meet with booking agents and meet with individual performers to develop their seasons. So at these conferences, you have what are called showcases, which are performances where performers will get like 12 to 15 minutes to give a short performance in front of all these presenters. And so after that, there's like an area marketplace where you have booths and you can meet with the presenters directly, talk about your act. So at these booking conferences, there'll be the presenters, there'll be independent artists, which is how we started out, how Good Company started out, and then you have booking agencies that represent lots of different artists, have a whole roster of artists. The main thing at these booking conferences are the showcases, because basically, like you said, Ari, there's these a lot of these artists you never heard of before. These presenters, they do book people that you've heard of before on occasion. You know, they might, if somebody's touring through, they might be able to book, you know, like Macklemore played at the Admiral Theater, which is in my hometown, which is a performing arts center. But most of the artists they book aren't really well known. So these conferences, these showcases are a chance for them to get to see the acts, see what they're about, see if they'll be a good fit for their upcoming seasons. And then to talk with the artists themselves or the booking agents and find out their fees, requirements, all that good stuff.
And I'm assuming, all like these conferences happen all over the country, based on just like the region. So like in the college market, You know, there's NACA, National Association of Campus Education, APCA. I don't actually know what APCA stands. Either way, there's these two major organizations that run all the conferences for the college industry, and buyers, they call them like campus activities boards, the students essentially that are in charge of the budget will show up to and showcases and book from. Now, everyone listening to this is thinking about breaking into the colleges. Don't even think about going to NACA on your own with an agent or without learning deeply, deeply, deeply about this. Now, it's the reason I have my book about this. It's the reason I have a whole course on it, Ferrari's Taking Cash, because it breaks my fucking heart when I see all of these musicians, they hear NACA once and they're like, oh, you can make a bunch of money breaking into NACA or breaking into the college market if you just show up at NACA. So they literally spend thousands and thousands of dollars to get a NACA membership, fly out to NACA to pay for the showcase admission fee, to pay for, you know, the booth, to pay for the day pass. It's literally thousands of dollars in the end. Like, oh, it's going to totally be worth it because I'm going to make, you know, $2,000 a gig, and you can book, like Ari said, he booked 50 gigs at one of these NACA conferences, which I did. Not by myself. I had an agent. Then they show up and I'm like there in the booth and I look and I just showcased, had a great showcase, and everyone wants to come talk to me and they all want to book me. And then I look to my right and there's an artist there who paid thousands of dollars to get this booth and to show up and to submit to showcase. And they're not showcasing, and now they're sitting there in an empty booth. Nobody wants to talk to them. Nobody books them, and now they have to fly home empty-handed, thousands and thousands of dollars in the hole. And it destroys me every time I see this because I'm like, man, these guys are so talented. They deserve all the gigs. But like you said, it's not about. It's more about, do you have your shit together? And it's more about, do you know how to go about this? And so I'm curious in the Performing Arts Center conference world, is it similar to that NACA scene, or how does this?
Yeah, it's very similar because I think it's really helpful to think about it from like the presenter's point of view. It's like, why would a presenter hire someone that they haven't seen showcase that, you know, they don't really know about, they don't have any, if they're not on an agency themselves and they don't have any sort of gauge to where this act is going to do a good job. So it's really similar. We talk about all the time how it's all about, like making connections, making community, making, relationships with different people. So the conferences are the same way, where the conferences are really there. There's been conferences that I've gone to the same conferences for years and years, and there's been people that I've presenters that I've known for years who haven't booked good company, and then maybe after knowing them for 5 years, they'll send me an email, be like, we'd like to get you this year or next season. And that's a long for musicians, like 5 years, that's a lot, long time to put in. But that's kind of the way it works. You have to develop these relationships. Now, I won't say that, like, we just had, in our course, a student that went to his first conference ever in Montana, and he blew it out of the water at his showcase. And he had, a line at his booth of Montana bookers that wanted to bring him out to their community. And he's booked a ton of gigs out of it. That can happen too. I've seen.
Well, that's because he had training from you. That's the thing. I mean, so basically what you're saying is just like, don't go in blind. And I think like, that's the thing, is just like a lot of like, yes, the reason that he was successful is because he put in the effort, you know, what is a student in a course on Performing Arts Center, learning all about this from you, an expert in this space, followed all the steps, got that showcase following the steps, then went there, killed the showcase because he was well prepared and knew exactly what to do. And that's the thing. And it's just like, even a showcase, which is not a guarantee, so hard to get at a lot of these things, you still need to know how to deliver at that showcase, which is a very different, how long are these showcases?
Quick, I want to let you know about Too Lost. Too Lost is a new distribution company to the space, and let me tell you, I am very impressed with them. I got a full deep dive demo with the founder. And yeah, they're very innovative. And when you come into the distribution space at this stage with how crowded it is, you better be innovative. And they are. Yes, they will get your music out to Spotify, Apple Music, all the places, plus 450 other outlets around the world. They do not take a commission. This is why 300,000 artists and labels have already used them. They've already distributed 7 million songs. They offer payment splitting, and they don't charge your collaborators for this service for the payment splitting. They will just pay your collaborators directly for free. They have publishing administration with BMG, so you know it's legit. A lot of distributors have fallen into trouble with using some other less than legit pub admin services. Well, Tulos is partnered with BMG. You know it's legit. They offer instant royalty advances. This is something that's very cool. And if you have historical streaming data and you need just a bulk payment up front, they can see how much your music has earned in the past. I'm like, all right, we think we know what you're going to earn in the next 3 years. Here's a check for $100,000 or whatever it will be. And you can just click a button and get that distributed and into your account immediately. They do lyrics and credits distribution for free. They have a very innovative analytics platform where, yes, you will see real-time analytics for Spotify, Apple Music, but also Pandora, Deezer, SoundCloud, and Peloton. They're the only ones that do Peloton. They also have a service where you can search the internet wherever your music is being used, and it will just show you a chart of everywhere, every TikTok video, everywhere, every YouTube video, everywhere your music is possibly being used. I've never seen this before. That was very cool. They'll register you with Sound Exchange, and they have a fraud prevention tool, and they're doing fraud prevention. So if you're worried about your music, you know, getting a bot attack or something like that and getting ripped down, which we've seen is a big issue. They have fraud prevention tools that are better than most other distributors that I have seen. Check out Tulost. You can just go to tulost.com, use the promo code Ari's Take for 3 months free and try them out. Let them know what you think.
Showcases are only like 12 to 15 minutes. They're crazy really short.
Yeah. Wow. And so you have to know, what are you going to do in this 12 to 15 minutes that is going to wow people and wow the presenters who are in charge of these thousand, you know, insane budgets.
And you really need to know, like you were saying, everything you're talking about, the reason why our student did so well is because he knew, they came to the booth and they're like, what's your rates? Is that an all-in rate? What are your block booking rates? What do you do for outreach? These are all terms that, like, when I first started out, I was lucky enough to be in a band that the band leader for that muddled through it all and had to figure out how it was. And I could kind of just observe. But yeah, if you don't know that, they're not going to want to book you. If you don't know what your block booking rates are, block booking is when you book with several different presenters at the same time. Mm-hmm. If you don't have an answer for them for outreach, they're not going to want to book with you, because a lot of presenters get grant funding from artists being able to do outreach.
What is outreach?
Outreach is anything in the community that you're doing to, you know, spread art and basically provide a cultural service to the community apart from your performance itself. So a lot of artists or a lot of presenters, especially in rural areas, will apply for grants that give them funding to bring out artists, and you can negotiate performances for that where you get paid an additional amount for doing outreach as well.
So that's like, interesting.
So if any of you have ever been to like a school assembly where there's like a band that comes in, or you know, a speaker, or I've done it like for retirement homes, I've done it for schools, I've done it for community centers, libraries, and being able to offer that is really important as a performer.
Interesting. So I mean, man, in other countries, artist grants are quite common, especially in Canada. Canada does a really wonderful job of supporting their artist community. We don't do so well in the States. There are very few artists that I know securing grants from the government to support their art. It does exist, but it's mostly packaged in this kind of capacity where if you're doing community outreach for the community, the local community. There's a lot of different steps. It's not like, oh, you're an artist and we want to support the arts because we think it's going to better our society, like Canada does it, which you can apply for grants as an artist in Canada, and people do it all the time, which is incredible and amazing. I wish we did that in the States. But this is more so a bunch of different steps. Basically, like, if you can put together programming for the community, then community centers can apply for this grant, and then they can essentially like funnel that through to the act because you're doing programming. Give me some example community outreaches for these touring musicians that are coming and playing these.
Sure. So one thing that's really nice about it too is like you're not the one that has to do the grant application process. It's through the presenters, and they typically have a long history of doing it, and they know exactly what to do. So different outreach. I would say the most common is probably like school outreaches, which is where a school might come to the theater you're performing at, or they might come to your sound check, or you might go to a school, before your performance, or maybe the next morning after your performance, where you perform and give maybe a talk on some aspect of whatever you're presenting.
Mm-hmm.
Other really common things are we're doing a swing dance for a show in next year, where before our show we're going to just do a open swing dance lesson for the community. Yeah,
cool.
And outreach can be really
Do you swing dance?
I do, yeah.
All right, well, I mean, it makes sense. It's good. You front an electro swing band swing dance. That's yeah, nice. That's great. Cool, fun.
And outreach can be really really fun, and really, really varies in what you can present. I have a buddy that does an entire presentation on stage fright, and it's awesome. Oh, really funny.
Cool.
Really connects with people, and yeah, that's a super fun thing. We've done tons of outreach, and outreach usually lasts like an hour or an hour and a half, sometimes 45 minutes. We've done like instrument petting zoos, or we've worked directly with band programs.
Instruments.
Yeah. Kind of a whole bunch of different stuff. But if there's something like passionate about your what you do, or anything that you have like that you think is like a really cool thing to share with people, you can develop an outreach on it.
Cool. Okay. So if someone is looking to get into this market, they think that they have an act, because that's the other big thing. It's just like, you know, it takes a very specific type of artist, type of act, type of performer and and group that would succeed in this market. As we're kind of looking at some of these examples, it's becoming clear now that it's not just your average rock band or pop band or hip or singer songwriter or whatever. It's can be marketed to the local community, like you know, Good Company, an electronic or tribute acts or whatever, cover bands. So if someone's listening is like, right up our alley, what would you recommend the steps that take into this?
Yeah, so I would really recommend not what you said, not just hopping in with both feet, because you're gonna spend a lot of money and not necessarily get any sort of return. I think that learning from someone that's done it before and has made the mistakes before you is really important. So whether that's like joining us in our course, which I think is the best way to do it, or if you're like, you know what, like I'm not ready for that yet, then reach out to people that are in that scene. If there's anyone in your local community that is performing arts centers, or you might look up your local performing arts center, seeing who's playing there and maybe emailing them directly and being like, hey, I'm kind of interested in this world. Or you can reach out to the conferences directly. Chances are there's a conference in close to your area. There's several ones. There's ones across the nation. There's both stateside ones, statewide ones, and national ones, and regional ones. Cool. So there's a lot of different conferences. You can reach out and find out more directly from them. But I actually had a friend that she immediately joined APAP, which is the nationwide one, and spent the money to be a member, and was planning on going to APAP. And she
in New York.
which is in New York and is the most expensive one, and it has all these different things that are very specific to APAP.
Sure.
And if you don't know it, you could be there just in a sea of people and be an expensive trip to New York.
Sure.
And luckily she reached out to me. She was like, "Hey, I heard you were involved in this. Can you tell me something about it?" And I was like, "Oh yeah, I wouldn't recommend doing this. I would recommend starting," you know, I gave her some pointers, like, "Maybe start here. You know, I'd be happy to take a look at your sizzle reel," which is how you apply for showcases and how you market yourself. And so it's like this whole big world with like 100 things to know. And I think that if you don't have that solid foundation, you're just not going to succeed, and you're going to be a little bit frustrated.
That's a really good piece of advice.
I mean, like I was saying, the travesty that I witnessed at every NACA conference that I went to of artists that tried to go at it blind, and they read like articles and they're like, "Oh, I got it. I know how to do this." And then lost. Yeah, you waste a ton of money.
Right. Like, you know, before I met you, I'd heard of APAP. I
asked my friend who performing arts, and it's like, "So how does somebody get involved?" He's like, "Well, I don't know. Go to APAP." I was like, "Oh, cool. That's great. All right. I cracked the code. I did it." But I'm glad I didn't, because I would have been one of those artists completely lost off
in that sea of thousands of people. Not understanding, but you know, the presenter,
you know, at the Performing Arts Center, didn't really know how they do it. And they're like, "Oh, we find our acts at APAP. So that's what we do." Mm-hmm. And, you know, which is like a very narrow part of the industry, and that's on the buyer's side. And it's like, they have their way of doing
it. They don't really know how the behind the scenes all of it works.
Like, "Oh, we just like look at these showcasing artists and cool, we book our entire season from that." But it's like, there's so much that goes on behind the scenes. I want to change gears a little bit, because Good Company also excels in kind of the wedding scene, the corporate world, other private events that, you know,
I'm not too familiar with.
I haven't done, done a few
mitzvahs back in the day,
a couple weddings back in the day, and you know, friends asked me to play at things here and there or whatnot, but like I never really jumped at that. I have friends who do some of this, but talk about the corporate world and the private event world and that whole thing that you also all
kind of how all that works.
Sure. So we kind of fell into I'd played weddings and for basically my whole like musical career with different groups. Mm-hmm. And we kind of fell into it for Good Company because we provide something that's really unique. Electro swing, there's not really other electro swing bands in the US. There's one other now, it's in Eugene. They've been around for a while now. But we're one of the only ones, so we would get a lot of people that would find us on just Googling or we'd pop up when they'd search for electro swing band US. So they would reach out and they'd be like, "Oh, we love you, we love swing music, but we want something a little bit different, and do you guys do weddings, blah blah blah?" And so that's kind of how we fell into it. Cool. And that was also how we fell into doing corporate work as well, because event planners would reach out to us and be like, "We have a Great Gatsby event, we have a Roaring Twenties themed event, are you available for that?" Mm-hmm. And so when we started off, we were like, "Oh yeah," I remember specifically asking the band at one rehearsal, like, I'm gonna book shows, but like, "Do you guys want to play weddings and other things? I'll be able to pay you, you know, x amount." And they were like, "Yes, we want that, we want to not work, you know, we want to make money for playing music."
Right.
So back then it was like, "I'll pay you $200 each to play this wedding for" mm-hmm. two hours. Everyone was like, "Awesome." and then over the years we've just like raised our rates, and we've gotten known to all the wedding planners and event planners in town as like a good band to work with. So most of our work now comes from referral. And that's the majority of, I would say, most people everybody that plays in my band is full-time musician, and they play in different projects, but I would say Good Company is their number one income. And that's how we make like 99% of our money is from performing arts centers and performing private events. We're playing a wedding this Saturday.
Nice. And you mentioned wedding planners, event planners. Can you speak to what those are for those of people listening who've never planned a wedding or sure. worked with an event planner? What are those?
So event planners and wedding planners are pretty much are really similar. And most wedding planners also plan events as well. And what wedding planners and event planners do are they just plan out the minutiae of an event. Mm. So that a big part of that is contracting with what they call vendors. And vendors are like catering is a vendor. If they have lighting, the lighting people are a vendor. Sound is a vendor. And the band is another vendor. So
because you're selling your services, vending, vendor, they're selling your services mm-hmm. of the band of music. Okay, got it.
Yeah, and a lot of times in this world, you might work directly with event planners and wedding coordinators. And then sometimes, and with weddings, you tend to work a little bit directly with the couple themselves.
Oh, okay.
But they're basically, their job is to make sure the trains run on time and everything goes smoothly and all that stuff. Everything's taken care of. Over the years, like having done weddings and had successful weddings, successful events, we got a reputation for event vendors or not event vendors, event planners and wedding planners that we were good people to work with. So they started recommending us to all their other clients.
Now you're slightly different because I know the wedding band market. I have a lot of friends who do play in wedding bands in that market. And there's like a book, there's like, you know, the hits and that kind of stuff. It's like, okay, they're going to play Uptown Funk and you're going to play, you know, whatever. It's just like all the other wedding songs that people know and get people out to the dance floor. When you play weddings, are you doing that book? Are you doing those covers and the standard fare that everybody knows is going to get played at a wedding?
Yeah, a lot of times we will get hired because they like our original music. But, you know, by the third set, there's always some relatives that are like, we want to hear Shout. So, right. Like, we have a pretty big book. We want to be in that world. It's like it's really not about like performing for yourself. It's about providing a service. Mm. So we view it that way. We're getting paid well to provide a service. Sure. We want to make the client happy. So we try to have a pretty big repertoire to be able to accommodate that. And I come from a world, I went to school for trumpet performance, and the people I work with are tend to be people that have just been playing gigs their whole lives. Mm-hmm. We try to be malleable to get the gig. So for instance, we have a gig later on this, in a couple of months, that is James Bond themed. So we're digging out all the James Bond tunes. We're learning them. Cool. But we're happy to do it because it's going to pay everybody in the band's going to get, you know, paid $500 for the show.
Nice. Yeah. So nice. Now, if someone doesn't know any wedding planners or event planners or something like that, is there a way that an artist can be proactive at trying to get these gigs?
Yeah, absolutely. You can really just literally Google event planners, wedding planners for whatever area you're in.
Okay.
Because these planners want to be found. They want to be found by clients.
Sure.
So if you're an artist and you're looking to connect with them, they should be easy to find. And then I would just reach out and well, I shouldn't say that. If I were somebody that was getting started, I would want to develop what I had to offer first before reaching out.
Sure.
Because really, you only get one chance at a first impression. But if you'd like to find out more about what you should offer, I would reach out to an event planner and be like, hey, do you mind? I'd love to take you out to coffee and just talk to you about what you're looking for when it comes to working with a band.
Cool.
And you can do that same thing with people in your area that are already in the market.
Nice.
Because like it tends to be, you'd think it'd be competitive, but and in some ways it is, but in other ways, musicians usually just want to help each other. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times you can help out each other in like, for instance, like if my band's not available, I'm going to recommend my friend Marina's band.
Mm. Cool.
And you know, if my bassist isn't free, maybe I'll grab the bassist from her band and he can sub for me.
So. Oh yeah, the freelance. I mean, hired guns. That you know, that's why. Every bassist in town should know every other bassist in town so they can sub out their gigs and then get subbed in when that person needs a sub and that whole thing. And absolutely. Now, what about some of these third party sites out there? Like mm-hmm. I've heard of, what is it? The Bash that used to be called
Gig Masters,
right? And then Gig Salad is one out there. There's like
Thumbtack.
Thumbtack. What else is out there?
There's also bark.com. Bark.
Okay.
Bark is really bad, but it's okay. It's there. Yeah, and there's a couple other places where you can get placed. You can get your like a placement, like Wedding Wire is one.
So explain what these services are and do you recommend them?
Yeah, so they are basically like directories, for lack of a better word, of vendors.
Okay.
So there are places where somebody's getting married, somebody needs a vendor for an event, they can go to like thebash.com and search for these different vendors and inquire about rates. And the vendors will have like a profile. So it's like, it's a little bit like, it's like a booking agency basically, but it's not, it's different from a typical booking agency, because a typical booking agency is going to be curated and it's going to be, you know, an artist or a booking agent that's representing all these artists. This is really more, you pay a fee to the website to be listed and then you directly interact with
and you have your profile there, like videos, your bio,
video, picture, bio.
Okay. Okay. So it's kind of like your resume. It's kind of like your website, but like you're just your seller's resume website right there, but meeting their criteria, so it's all uniformed. And what are the fees we're talking about? How much are these to sign up for these sites?
The different sites are a little bit different in what they charge. I would say the Bash is like the most reputable, and its fees are like, there's a spreadsheet of these fees on the course, and I always forget what.
It's like we're talking like hundreds of dollars. Yeah, it's year, like a month,
probably like 1,000 ish a year.
Okay,
maybe it's a little bit less for the Bash. But yeah, somewhere around there, you can expect to pay like maybe like 60 to 100 bucks a month, depending on. They also have different like levels of.
And how do you book directly through these sites, or do you just list your email and then they email you?
Yeah, the sites would prefer you to book directly through them, because typically the sites will take a fee to be listed, and then they will take a booking fee, which is typically like 5 or 10%. So when you book directly through them, they'll deduct that fee. And usually the caveat of like why you wouldn't just book directly yourself is that you clients can't leave reviews unless you book directly through their site.
Ah, got it. Okay, so
that's how
sense.
They hook you.
Right. Okay, so you pay the, you know, 100 bucks, 200 bucks, or whatever to get on the site, but then it's the 5% booking fee is what they take, like an agency, except it's agents typically are taking 10%. Okay, interesting, cool. In terms of and like the gigs there for these kinds of third-party sites, they range a bit. I mean, are these like, this is just for the kind of the private events? What kind of gigs are we talking about on these sites?
Yeah. So, weddings, corporate events, like we're about to get booked for a memorial, service off of it, but also like, kind of anything that you might think of that's like private. It's not a club. Every once in a while there might be somebody that's booking for like a festival, but that's pretty rare.
My singer-songwriter friends, they're on some of these sites, and I know like they get booked to do proposals, like hire them and like set up over there in the park, and we're gonna walk by, and when I get down on one knee, you're gonna play her favorite Ed Sheeran song. And they're right, like, oh, okay, right. Fine. Like, and we'll pay you $500. It's like, all right, fine.
Yeah, sure.
One song, $500, deal. Done. Yeah. Let's go.
We just did a really elaborate wedding where it was one song, and it was Love Goes by Sam Smith.
Okay.
And it was this big, huge production, and it was like one song, $2,500.
Oh my gosh. That's, that's like on The Bachelor, when there's always that one moment or that one episode where like they take the, you know, on the date, and then there's like some artist playing that one song and it's up there. Yeah, that's funny. That's cute. Cool. Well, this has been so informative and so helpful. You know, how can people learn more about Good Company and all of that?
Yeah, well, you can find out about Good Company at goodcomusic.com. Goodco was already taken. And so we had to put the music at the end of it.
Goodcomusic.com.
If you'd like to find out about like all the crazy stuff I do, I just launched a booking agency called Rayburn Entertainment.
Amazing.
One thing I wanted to say, and if you'd like to find out more about all this stuff, like you should check out the course that I run.
Ari's Take Academy, baby. Let's do it.
Ari's Take Academy. I think, honestly, like one more thing about it, like the thing that I think, even if, like out of everything that you can get out of the course, I think the part that we have about how to negotiate rates is really, really valuable information. And it's from years of me undercharging and not knowing what to do and not knowing how to negotiate rates. And I would say from friends, from people I work with, from people in the course, that's the question that you get the absolutely most. How much do I ask for this gig?
Yes. Yes.
And in the course, we go through how you can get the most for each gig and how you can make sure that you're you know, working with a client to reach an amount that's the most that they're comfortable paying and that you're happy to get.
That dance, man, that dance I've done. And right, it's really like, yes, years I'm sure it took you to figure out how to do that dance. And I did the same dance for years where, you know, it's always kind of like they say, what's your rate? And whatever you say, if they say sounds good to that, you're like, shit, I undercharged myself. Cause like, you know, but it's a dance. Cause then if like you throw out a crazy number, then like you never hear back. And then it's kind of like, oh crap. I threw out the time. So like, how you describe it and how you really lay out exactly how to negotiate. I think you're right. That is probably the most valuable part. One of the most valuable parts of the course. And that was like the light bulb that went off. It's like, oh man, That is something that it took years for me to master. I still don't feel like I mastered it, but you've mastered it. And so that was really cool to kind of see how you laid that out, the script that you give the students. And that's super valuable and helpful.
Yeah, it's really, it's crazy because it's really honestly the difference between like we were negotiating something and like I always have like the minimum in my head of what I want to play for. And the minimum in my head for this particular gig was like 3,000. But because I knew how to approach it, we ended up getting $7,500 for the gig.
Hell yeah. Wow. Okay.
It's really crazy. And like,
that's nuts.
And that wasn't me like squeezing all the money I could out of it. Like the client is super happy with that.
Yeah.
She's thinks like, cause for her, it's like, I'm getting this great value. This band is planned for $7,500. That's like worth to them. A lot of musicians are always thinking like, if I ask for too much, like, I'm going to seem like it's ridiculous, but no, like the more money somebody spends, the more worth they are in their mind.
That's right. It's the higher value. You got to know. Yeah. Know your value.
That's why my $200 Converse shoes are so much more nice than my $50 Goodwill ones or whatever.
And that's why a $50 bottle of wine tastes so much better than a $10 bottle of wine, right?
Absolutely.
Cool. Well, Carrie, this has been great. I have one final question that I ask everybody who comes on the show. That is, what does it mean to you to make it in the new music business?
Yeah, I think that's an awesome question and something I'm a big fan of Ari's Take for years. And I am always struck by people saying that the answer I see the most, even from people that are really successful in one facet of music, is to make a living doing music is what they mean is making it. And I was thinking about that recently. And I think now, after the pandemic, I felt like before the pandemic, I was always in these like different worlds of the grass is always greener on that. I wish I could be like that artist that's touring all the time, or I wish I could be that artist that's got these sync placements that I want. And now I think that making it for me, I think making it is different for different people. But for me, I think it's being happy with where I'm at in my career and not always chasing the next thing that I think I should be doing or that I'm unhappy that I'm not successful in this field. I think right now I'm really feel happy about like my trajectory and what I'm focusing on. And I'm getting rid of all this stuff. Like I suck at Instagram and I've sucked at Instagram for years and I would force myself to do Instagram and I'm chucking that because that's not me. I'm not successful. I've never been, I'm not going to be, I can just leave it.
Nice.
So that to me, that's making it for me is being happy with where I'm at and what I'm working on.
That's some enlightened stuff, Carrie. Carrie Rayburn, thank you so much. That's great.
Thanks, Ari.
Today's episode was edited by Maxton Hunter, theme music by Brassroots District, and produced by all the great people at Ari's Take. This episode is brought to you by DistroKid. DistroKid is a distribution service that can get your music into all the DSPs like Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram. Over a million artists have used DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I've used DistroKid to get my music out, distribute some of my songs. As you know, as I look into all of these distribution services, I test them out. And DistroKid is great. They offer a ton of features. Annual fee, unlimited uploads, and you keep 100% of your royalties. Check out DistroKid.com.